teacher's over for me.
Hey.
I do have an apology. The deputy minister is in hospital
currently. Okay.
So she won't be joining, and the minister is not available. The minister is participating in the Russia-Ukraine debate in the National Assembly.
Okay, okay. And then is the DG joining us? Are they back from their trip?
Yes, Linton will be joining us. I think he's doing the presentation. I'm not sure who from SASA will be joining us, Chair.
Okay, thanks, Marcel. Sure. Let me get the card before we start.
Yeah, okay. I've got no apologies from our members, Chair, but those are the two apologies from the department that I have.
Okay, it's just Member Maleka that thought the meeting is 3 o'clock.
Oh, my shame.
Okay, see you later.
Okay. Yes, Chair. Bye.
Department of Social Development and SASA. Welcome to this select committee meeting. Members, I've got the agenda. It's flagged on the screen. I believe we've got a quorum. If you go through the agenda, we will have a briefing by the Department of Social Development and SASA on their progress report and implementation of the social relief program, and then also progress report on interventions to address effects of Gauteng province and KZN unrest and social development facilities. That will be till 5:45. And then we will excuse the department and we will continue with our committee discussions and, from 5:50 to 6:00 or 5:50 to 7:00. After that, we will excuse the department doing the adoption of our committee minutes and other business. And at 7:30, we propose closure. Sorry, is there any mover for the adoption of the agenda? Can we have a mover for the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Member Dongeni. I did hear you, Comrade Dongeni. Is it my rejection? I can hardly hear. The problem is at my side, or is it in the other side? Members, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I hear you.
Okay, members.
Yes, we hear you. We hear you.
Thank you, my dear. So Member Dongeni did move for adoption, and is it Member Latuli that do the second?
Yes,
because I only see iPhone. I only see iPhone. So it's Member Latuli.
Member Latuli, I can't rename my phone because I'm using the phone now.
Okay, my dear. So you proposed to second Member Dongeni's proposal for the adoption?
Yes, yes, Chairperson, yes.
Thank you, Member Latuli. Members, we can now move to apologies. I received, if you can remember, members, last week the minister share with us that the deputy minister is not well. So we received an apology from the deputy minister who is admitted into hospital. Let's keep the DM in our prayers. And then the minister has also apologized because he is participating in the debate in the National Assembly this afternoon. Further than that, I did not get any other apologies. Can we move for the adoption of the apology for the minister and the deputy minister? Is there, thank you, Member Dongeni. objections and the apologies, members? So we can move and accept the apology of the minister and the deputy minister and wishing the minister well. Let me then welcome the DG, and these staff members within this meeting. Welcome back, DG, and your colleagues after you were out of the country for a short while. I will immediately hand over to TD. Mr. Linton, you and your team can continue with your presentation.
Honorable Chairperson, let me thank you once again for the opportunity, and indeed it is good to be back. We have been on mission a few days ago, so I want to really appreciate the committee for calling us back to this meeting to present, of course, on to brief the committee rather on our interventions to address the challenges of the unrest in KZN and in Gauteng provinces, and of course, give you feedback. I think we've provided feedback last year, but of course, the ground has shifted quite a bit, and we were able to make even further interventions that assisted the communities both in Gauteng and in KZN provinces, and of course, largely through our relief measures, and also through a number of others, which I will outline shortly. Indeed, also to provide you with an update in terms of the social relief of distress grant of 350. We have largely stuck to our areas of focus as we presented in the last
recording meeting, in progress.
And we will be providing inputs within that particular framework. Chair, if I could just kindly get guidance whether somebody will flag the presentation at the secretariat, or whether we should do it on our end.
Marcel.
Chairperson, good afternoon, members. Good afternoon, officials from the department and the DG. I have given the DG sharing rights chair, as well as a few of his colleagues, so they are able to flag the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Marcel.
Okay. Thank you very much. I just want to check, Rogers, are you with us? Are you able to assist us in flagging the presentation? Otherwise, I will attempt from my end. I'm having a serious challenge with my connectivity today. But Rogers, are you able to help? Please confirm that you're able to, Rogers. Rogers. Okay, it's fine. I'll do it, Chair. I hope that it's visible now on the screen. I've just shared it. Okay. Chair, let me welcome.
Not visible, Mr. Linton.
And there we go. I think that should show now.
It's visible from outside.
Great.
Yes,
thank you. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. So Chair, if I may just put it on slideshow so that it's easier for members to see. Slideshow. Come on, slide from the beginning. There we are. Thank you very much once again, Honorable Chair. I must indicate that I'm joined by my colleagues in the department. I'm also joined by my colleagues from SASSA, who will do the latter part of the presentation. I will start and then hand over to Mr. Peter Nechibale. And immediately after that, Peter will hand over to SASSA. And I take it the CEO is in the meeting, and Diane. who will take us through the latter part of the presentation, particularly focusing on the 350 granted chair. You would have noted that the president has, of course, extended the 350 grant, which we are very happy about, for another year. And we're working hard to ensure that all systems are in place in that regard. So, Chairperson, if I may, this is really just the outline of the presentation. I won't get into the specifics here. I would just say that, Chair, that our presentation today focuses on the aspects that we have stuck to as per the last presentation, as indicated. We look at food security, what we've done in terms of food security and providing support in that regard. We look at how we've assisted children, the children that were those that may have been arrested. And I think that we just touch high level on that. And then we'll also show you and look at the offices that were destroyed, and we'll indicate to you what we've done and how we've moved post that in terms of finding alternative accommodation. We'll also look at just some impact in terms of the real-time monitoring tool that we employed, particularly in KZN. We'll also look at the levels of support that we provided in terms of psychosocial support. We look at a very important aspect, which is around social mobilization and rebuilding. And then lastly, of course, we look at the social relief measures with regards to the 350 grant. This is just the purpose of the presentation, which I've already highlighted. I just wanted to state here that we were really, at least the Department of Social Development was really at the center stage with regards to the challenges that affected people both in KZN and Gauteng. And of course, a lot was said about the fact that part of the reasons why the unrest occurred was largely because of the social challenges that people face in terms of not having employment and not having opportunities particularly for employment and also for the young people. So there's an aspect of that as well. But I just wanted to highlight that there was a serious demand on our services as the Department of Social Development, not just as a department, but as our entire portfolio, which included SASA and the NDA. Because of the challenges that affected people on the ground, the result was the social challenges that followed. We were extremely stretched. Our teams were working throughout day and night, and even in areas that were cordoned off and we were not able to get in. We tried to get our teams out there. And then, of course, just to indicate that it was only after September or so that we started normalizing again in terms of the service. Well, the services continued. We found alternative ways, which you will see later in the presentation. But we really started seeing an ease and a sort of return back to normal after September or so. But of course, this is not the case when it comes to jobs. You know, the jobs that were lost during the unrest, in most cases, those people are still very much unemployed and are really getting support through the 350 grant in the main. And then just to highlight that through the Solidarity Fund, insofar as food security is concerned, we fed just over 271,000 people. And of course, this is really probably a very small percentage of the other supports that we received from the private sector, from members of the clergy in terms of the various religious movements. And of course, the South Africans, we actually came out and said, we're not going to allow anybody to go to bed hungry. And we, you know, we will assist in the best way that we can in terms of assisting neighbors and family members, particularly in these two provinces. And then, of course, it was just to highlight that we provide the 350 grant. We continue to provide it. And all services have been integrated into the normal delivery in the two provinces. This report will highlight information with regards to the food distribution from the Solidarity Fund and the 350 grant updates. But as I indicated, we'll focus on the six areas that we spoke to. I'm going to ask Peter quickly just to come in and present on this slide moving forward. I just also need to indicate, Chair, that we did have a visit by the Portfolio Committee, which visited both Gauteng and KZN in terms of oversight. And we did brief them accordingly in terms of progress. And I think their report was also adopted in the National Assembly. So some of these aspects that we include in this presentation also come from the inputs and suggestions that come from members of the Portfolio Committee, particularly the National Assembly. So Peter, if I can allow you to continue with the presentation from here on, and then we will get to SASA at the tail end, please. Thank you.
Thanks very much, the Acting DG, for this opportunity. We are out of that. Marcel, is that you were sharing? Honorable members, chairperson, and all honorable members. This first slide number. Yeah, this one. I think the DG have touched on the role that the Department of Social Development have played based on our mandate, which is to provide care and support, especially for the vulnerable people, and especially this time, everyone made vulnerable due to the unrest. And this unrest in KZN occurred at a time when we are in the middle of COVID pandemic, and the economy was not growing. There were high levels of unemployment, and many people were becoming unemployed and becoming needy. And the socioeconomic challenges that were perpetuated by COVID was deepening. So therefore, that came as a serious concern for the department that made sure that we cater for those people that are in need. You will realize that at that time in 2019, just about 20% of the household in the country were considered to be vulnerable. So when this came, it becomes worse. And that became a serious challenge for the department to implement. Next slide. The challenges that we have, I think, is that many communities during that during the unrest face major food shortages due to the disruption of the food supply chains that happened by looting supermarkets and touching the goods trucks. In KwaZulu-Natal, it was worse, but that also exacerbated the transportation of food to the inland, which is Gauteng and other provinces. And that created a lot of challenges. The worst part was the psychosocial support, psychosocial problems that people have experienced, and the food security, where people could not buy food because most of the shops were closed. Next slide. The slides just indicate that you might have seen this. This is the distractions in different offices of DSD and SASA in KZN. You can see that even some of the cars were vandalized, the engines and gearboxes were looted. The next slide. These are some of the offices that were vandalized, the glasses broken. Next slide. This is some of the offices that were vandalized in KZN. As DSD National, under the leadership of the Acting Director General, we immediately sit down and develop some areas that we need to intervene. The key interventions that the DSD portfolio, NDA, SASA, and the DSD started was to ensure that access to DSD services is restored, that SRD is provided by SASA and provincial DSD, and the food to the most vulnerable household and individuals were provided. We also look at the provision of psychosocial support services, social mobilization, rebuilding of the communities and families that were destroyed, and also the social relief, and also the continuation of the SRD grant. So the report will be based on this in terms of how much we have. This is an updated report that includes up to the end of September. Next slide. access to social services. The grant collections that were affected, but a bulk were already collected at the time when this unrest started. And with that arrangement were made that a lot of people need to go to the banks to get their SASA. And also the DSD services, by time of the reporting, they were all fully restored in different areas. And I think alternative accommodation were sought in the nearby vacant offices. And the mobile services were also provided in mostly in Etekwini and the municipality. And both DSD and the SASA worked jointly to ensure that our services are enhanced and the coordination and support to our people is enhanced and everybody gets the services that we need. Next slide. In relation to the SASA SRD food security and the provincial SD support, both the SASA SRD and the provincial SRD and food vouchers were mobilized and the people were fed. The allocation of SRD, which were very little, has to be augmented to make sure that we cover the necessary needs that were provided. 664,240 food parcels were provided, which meant it fed about 322,000 individuals in Gauteng especially. In Gauteng, you remember that in Gauteng, they had a food banks that provided at a district. We mobilized those that they must be able to provide food in different areas so that every individual that we need were provided with food. In KZN, over 61,000 meals were provided from the center-based feeding programs. Individuals, churches, the interfaith leaders and the businesses and other NPOs, including Solidarity Fund, also played a critical role in supporting the most vulnerable with food in that area. With regard to the Solidarity Fund, they pledged 100 million, which were to feed individuals in those areas, and over 271 individuals that were affected by violence were fed. And this was a makeshift approach where we used our center-based feeding programs, and we were able to reach all families that were in need, including the individuals. Next slide. Next slide. Amongst the other issues that we have, one of the things that was, which is always neglected, it is the issue of the psychosocial support services. When such unrest takes place, people get stressed, get demoralized, the level of suicide increases, and a lot of people get dejected. So one of the strong points of the Department of Social Development is the provision of psychosocial services that we use our social workers that counseled a lot of people. That was provided to household and to individual in their own areas and also in the centers which we have in the province. Some of the children who were affected, some of them were arrested as they were amongst the people that were looting. We intervened. The children's, in terms of the Children's Act, we need to look to make sure that children are put in the safe place of safety. And all those children were assessed in line with Child Justice Act. And those that were found not to be in conflict with any law, they were placed with their own parents to make sure that we take care of their well-being. Next slide. The issue of social mobilization, immediately after the advent of this unrest in KZN and Gauteng, one of the strong points that we looked at was to ensure that we restore peace, we restore the dignity of the individuals, and we make sure that those in communities would derive what you call social cohesion. People were requested to meet and to be psychologically restored. And also we made sure that everyone in the communities are looked after. In cases where the unrest have left some people homeless, we place those in different place of safety for them. The NDA conducted several social mobilization sessions in KwaZulu-Natal together with the Department of Arts and Culture, who continually implemented that. Members of the society, especially the clergy, civil society organization, public and private sector continue to play an important role in calling for the law and order in the country, and also in mitigating for to rebuild the sustainability and the livelihood of the individuals. Some areas like Phoenix, which were hardly affected, it took long to get the that area affected, but with other members of the society, several dialogues were hosted. Even with the restriction of COVID, we make sure that we take certain numbers that we did social mobilization and to ensure that we restore the dignity of the community. Next slide. I've mentioned this, that the process of rebuilding always take long, and it was not easy, as I could report in that way, because it was last year. It was not easy, and we had to ensure that this order, so that businesses and investors' confidence are restored, and jobs are created, and infrastructure begins to be rebuilt. And from this, we have learned a lot of lessons to make sure that we build our social compact with our community and create a South African that we need. Next slide. One of the things that were done during that, the department immediately instituted the real-time monitoring as analysis, which we use a tool to collect the data that will also indicate the mostly affected people and collaborate with us in terms of who are the most affected and what services do they need. And I think the real-time monitoring tool study were conducted a lot of visits and the reassessment of the well-being of about 47 children from 34 households that has been previously assessed in earlier. And this household were selected to make sure that I think we have got a scientific approach that will be able to give us the indication in terms of how we need to deal with this issue. This is one of the analysis that is very valuable. And it is when we reintegrate the services back, we were able to pinpoint and target, provide targeted interventions to the needy. Next slide. I think the next two slides is just comparisons of what has happened in terms of the areas that we looked at. For example, the issue of the food security, which we looked at and found that indeed there's a need that we need to provide a food security. The next slide, the economic well-being, we're also assessed to check at what is the current economic well-being of the individual in those areas. And they found that, I think in terms of this, they is highly affected, and people, I think, still need to be assisted up to a certain level. The next slide is we looked at the care and the protection, where we look at the child protection findings. In this area, we found that a lot of kids were very affected. And it also indicated to us, you can see on this graph, there's a negative scores that indicate that they are highly affected and they are the impact of the unrest has made some uncomfortability within our community. Next slide is about the lessons that were learned and from this analysis, that indeed a longitudinal study need to be conducted to make sure whether we have restored those factors that we analyzed, the child protection, the economic unwellness, the food security, and this will also give us some indication in terms of using this real-time data and the longitudinal study, we'll be able to come up with a very interesting approach in terms of how we could also do preventative mechanisms to ensure that we address these issues going forward. I would think from the DSG point of view, I will end here and I'll request the SASA to take us through the special COVID SRD grant, how they were provided up to end of February. Thank you very much, Acting DG.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter. Just to say, Peter, you, Chairperson, Peter may have indicated that these interventions he spoke to only go up to September. They actually go beyond September, even up to now, in terms of the interventions that we continue to provide. I just wanted to correct that quickly. Thank you very much. I will now ask Sasa to come in, CEO, and Diane.
Thank you very much, DG. I seemingly have the host having stopped my video from appearing, but Diane will take the bulk of the presentation, so hopefully she can show. Good afternoon, Chair, honorable members. I think the key thing that we need to highlight is the fact that we had two branches that were affected during the time in KZN, and one of them has already been opened. The one in Gwagwamashu is the one that is not opened yet, but we've deployed all the people that work there in other areas so that they can continue to provide support. In Gauteng, the one that was totally vandalized was the one in Alexandra, and that branch is up and running, and we worked very closely with the radio station there and the community to make sure that we get this up and running as quickly as possible. Just coming back to Gwamashu, what is important to indicate is that we had a number of files that were banned in terms of files where we need to do debtors, and we are trying to recreate those files to make sure that we can do the collection. What's been interesting is that we found that the number of people who were affected at the time who were actually in our debtors book are the people that currently had to come back and request for SRD 350, which means that it's going to be interesting for us to see as to whether we can indeed still collect, but indications are that those people are actually still vulnerable people over and above the others that we need to trace. The ones in the East Rand and Soweto were areas that were temporarily closed, and all of those areas are actually already opened now. The lessons learned with regards to the files in particular is that it becomes very important for us to make sure that all our documents are digitized so that we don't have, we can manage this risk in future. With regard to the COVID grant, Diane will talk to the detail in relation to its a reinstatement and where we are currently and the challenges where they exist that we face and how we're looking at resolving those challenges. Diane, over to you.
Thank you so much, CEO. Okay, I'm also not able to do my video, but at least I'm hoping that the honorable members can hear me. I'm going to just cover the COVID grant and really just to remind members where we come from with this grant.
Recording stopped.
That we started in May of 2020. Initially, it was a grant that was implemented for a period of 6 months, but there have been several extensions from that time. The grant from the first iteration came to an end at the end of April 2021, and then it was reinstated from August of 2021 with the indication that it would be there for 8 months until the 31st of March. And as we're all aware, it was announced in the State of the Nation address by the president that it will now continue for a further year from April 22 until March 2023. So as much as we're busy paying the grant at the moment, we're also working really hard to make sure that we are ready for the implementation of the extension of the grant from the 1st of April. What the grant currently covers all unemployed people who meet the criteria, as well as caregivers. So caregivers who are receiving a child grant, that's either the child support grant, the foster child grant, or the care dependency grant, if they do not have any other income apart from the
recording
grant,
in progress,
are also able to qualify for this grant. And the reason for that is that the grant they receive from SASSA is for the care of the child, and there is no amount provided for the care of the adult. So the 350 grant then goes a little way in terms of providing some income support in those vulnerable families. Thanks, DG. If we can then just move on, looking, firstly, we're going to look at where we had got to up to April 2021 when the grant came to an end. We'd spent about 24 billion rand for that period from May 2020 right through to April of 2021. And we paid about 6 million beneficiaries per month. In the last month, it went up to 6.5 million of the applicants that we had received. So the total number of grants that were paid, not people, but the total number of grants was just over 68 million. And this covers about 99% of the approved applications that were actually paid out. There were some residual numbers that we couldn't pay for various reasons. And these include the transactions from people whose applications were approved, but they either could not be traced or they didn't update contact details, and we were then not able to pay them. And that was 581,000 transactions that we were not able to pay. And of that 581,000, it includes 571,724 grants, which were not collected at the post office. So they were approved, they were paid over to the post office, but they were not collected. And that was the number as of July 2021. We know that there were collections after that, but there'd be no collections from the first iteration after the end of November. Also, just as a matter of interest, we did have some people who were lucky enough either to get funded for studying or to get employment, and they then voluntarily cancelled their applications. And in the first round, that was 104,565 of those. And then of the clients who'd originally applied, just over 101,000 had actually passed away in the time that they were receiving the grant. Now, if we move on to the grant from the 1st of August, and this just gives you an indication per province of the grants that have been approved and paid. And I've spread it over a number of slides so that you can see for each month how far we had got. For August, you can see we paid 99, very nearly 100% of the clients that were approved. And it stays at that kind of rate, sort of around the 98% for September and October, if we can move, DG. And then for November, December, and January, we were around the 95% mark. And then if we can look at February. Okay, sorry, this one goes up to January. We do still have February. February payments that we have done is also about 95%, which has been done after this presentation was prepared. I think the important thing to note from these numbers, the people who don't get paid, so those 4 or 5% that are indicated as not paid each month, there are a number of reasons for that. Either it is because we're waiting for the bank account details to be verified, or the people have changed bank details and we're just waiting for the second bank to be verified, or funds have been paid to them and then it has been rejected by the bank, so the bank account has been closed. So it is in those cases that we're not able to pay the people. But everybody that we have a bank account for, or who has a bank account open for them at the post office, have in fact been paid for all the months up to and including February. Thanks, DG. Now, just if we looked This was where we were at February. We were then at 4.9 million of the 10.5 million that had been approved that were paid. We're now currently sitting at just on 10 million grants for February that have been paid. So at the 95% mark for payments for February. Thank you. We just wanted to give some idea of the profile of the applicants for this grant. And I think, and the highlight in green here shows you that the largest number are for people, young people, aged between 18 and 35. And this has been consistently sitting at around 60% of all the applications, even within the first iteration of the grant. You'll see that we've received over 15 million applications in total. And of those, 10.5 million have actually been approved. Thank you. The citizenship is another important slide to just have a quick look at, because we get a lot of questions to, or a lot of complaints to say that we're paying this grant largely to non-South African citizens. And I think from this slide, you can see that 99% of all the applicants are South African citizens, with a very small number being permanent residents. Many of these people have lived in this country for many years, and then an even smaller number being refugees. We've only got about 7,000 refugees that have applied for this grant. Thank you. And then the other categories are the asylum seekers and the special permit holders. Not big numbers. We had 19,800 applications received. These, when we did further analysis, are not all individual or unique applications. There are some duplicates in this number. The total number that have been received from individual asylum seekers or special permit holders when the duplicates have been removed is around 12,000. Of this category of citizens. Thank you. Then just the other thing, we will continue with the processing of this grant. And as I've said, I just wanted to quickly brief the honorable members on readiness for the extension of the grant. And I'm sure social development would also provide more information on this. With the imminent lifting of the state of disaster, it does mean that the regulatory framework under which the relief grant is being paid has to change. Previously, it was provided in terms of directions that were developed in terms of the Disaster Management Act. We are now in the process with social development to bring it in under the umbrella of the Social Assistance Act as a form of social relief. And this will be finalized and ready by the 1st of April, so that we do have a legal framework within which this grant can continue to be implemented. There are some changes that would be coming to the qualifying criteria, because one of the concerns by National Treasury particularly is that there are still people who are receiving this grant who do not qualify for it because either they're employed or they have the ability to generate income for themselves. And we need to try and refine the criteria to be able to make sure that we really do target this grant where it is needed most. Thank you so much, DG. I will leave you to wrap up. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Ms. Diane and the chairperson. If I would just make maybe just four quick points. Firstly, members would note that a large number of people in both provinces, and you would have seen on this slide, that the most recipients are from KZN and Gauteng, which is indicative of the challenges that people faced in those two provinces, particularly post the unrest. So, and this is of course as a result of the many people being out of work who remain in serious hardship, particularly because of the damaged infrastructure, shops that have been destroyed, and some businesses have actually opted not to reopen, leaving a number of people in a much more difficult situation than they were before the unrest. Now, we saw numbers of grants increasing immediately after the unrest due to the difficult situation. We moved to, I think, Dan, we're probably at 10.5 million now, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere around there, having moved from around 6-7 million upwards during the second iteration, which is, I think it was around October or so, if I'm not mistaken. And this again, Chair, is indicative of the serious hardship and challenges faced in these two provinces as a result of the unrest. And I think that that's very, very important to note. And then I must highlight, Chair, that our immediate task is twofold in the main. And I'm just highlighting the critical aspects. One is to ensure that we get people back into jobs and so that they're able to stand on their own again and to restore people's dignity. I think that's fundamental. Now, whilst government has a critical role to play in this regard, particularly in creating the conducive environment for job creation, the task is so difficult that it actually doesn't only require government, but it requires what the president calls a social compact between government, business, civil society, labor, and every other sector of society to hold hands together and ensure that we are able to address the challenges of jobs in our country. I think what is significant to mention is that the 350 grant has certainly, it has not addressed job creation. There's a reality. It has addressed inequality possibly to a very small extent, but what it definitely has done is to reduce poverty. And that's the one significant impact that the 350 grant has had over time. And so I must also indicate that through other interventions that we had, like the Presidential Employment Stimulus Package and the implementation of the Economic Reconstruction and the ERRP plan, we were able, particularly through the Presidential Employment Stimulus Package, to support those who had hardship, particularly those who may have been social workers. We were able to absorb them across all provinces, but mostly, and we absorbed the most social workers actually in KZN because of the challenges faced in the province during the time. But we were also able to assist early childhood development, the sector on the whole, the workforce. The second aspect that we need to do moving forward is a critical aspect, which we have started actually, is the rebuilding aspect and ensuring that people actually understand the impact and the ripple effect I would confine myself largely to the criminal activities, that were as a result of the unrest, and really bringing a sense of social cohesion in communities and ensuring and encouraging people to dialogue and to engage with each other, with the various community stakeholders, and of course with all other sectors of society. And then, Chair, I must just also indicate lastly that in terms of the lessons learned, I think one of the crucial lessons for me that has come out of this entire process is to ensure that we have much more agile plans in place to respond to the immediate shocks and to ensure that our systems are well integrated and robust as possible, so that if something similar happens again, has to happen again, we must be ready and we must go beyond even what has happened before. So I think that that's the critical lesson. And I think we've geared a lot of systems in place to ensure that we're able to respond in that regard. Just lastly, Chair, we've invested quite heavily in our systems, particularly in the grants space, to ensure that all recipients receive their monies much quicker, but also to ensure that we reduce wastage in the system. And as Diana said, Treasury has really indicated that the fiscus is tight. We are operating in a very difficult fiscal space, and we have to make sure that we try and get people more into jobs. And I know, as a matter of fact, that people would rather prefer getting into jobs as opposed to having grants, because they pay much less. And because when you have a job, you actually obviously get paid much more. And, it's just what I know that people would rather opt for. So in the new criteria, you will see how we've tightened up the system to ensure that only those who really deserve and really need the grant are able to get it, so as we move into the next iteration, rather, you will see our systems being much more agile and our criteria being a lot more sterner, so that we can cut out all those who don't necessarily need the grant, so we can also ensure that we're able to respond to these challenges around the fiscus being very tight for us to operate in. So Diane has already indicated that the regulatory framework is underway, and we are going to conclude that in the coming days to ensure that post-March we're indeed able to pay the grant. So Chairperson, I want to really thank you for the opportunity for us to be able to respond, or rather to provide updates in terms of the work that we've done. And of course, we continue working very closely with the provinces, but also as a portfolio in terms of ensuring that we are able to support and bring the best service to all recipients, particularly in KZN and in Gauteng. So Chairperson, on that note, I think we will pause and then take questions and any further clarity seeking questions. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. Members, I am struggling with my connection, so that's why my video is off. Let me take the opportunity to thank the department for this presentation. Are we going to get another presentation, or can we continue with discussions? Marcel?
Chair, just the one presentation, Chair. There are hands raised for questions.
Okay, thank you. Members, you can give an indication. I've got Member Lutuli and Member Christians. If any other member need to ask a question or make a comment, please raise your hand. I've got Member Lutuli, Member Christians, and Member Lehi in that order. You can start, Member Lutuli. Member Lutuli, we are unable to hear you. I think you must move a bit. Member Lutuli, we can't hear you, member. Member Lutuli. Member Lutuli, there's a problem with your connection. Can you please move to another area? I will get Member Christians now. Member Christians, you can continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got two questions at the moment. I might have more afterwards or handed in via written. The first question is, so the department reports that psychosocial support services and counseling has continued in these provinces, and that all individuals and families that were in need, especially from the trauma caused by the unrest, were given such support. My question to you, Chairperson, or to the department rather, is how many social workers were employed? I heard that mention was made that social workers were deployed and employed. I would like to know how many were employed, to which various areas were employed, and what kind of psychosocial assistance was given by these social workers. And then the second question is that the presentation also indicates that as at the 20th of October 2021, DST received about 19,800 applications from asylum seekers and special permit holders. Now, my question around these were, are all these applicants paid to date? And if not, how many were rejected, if any? And if there were any rejections, what were the reasons for these rejections? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christians. We've got Member Lehi next.
Kalabaka Chairperson. Chairperson, ke botsa gore ke madi a lokae a kgapetseng go thoko go ka thusa the home-based care in South Africa ka bophara, especially ba lokhaila ba magae abana khotsa one malapa a magae aba se ba tshilang ka bogotlhe. Ke a leboga.
Thank you, Member Lee. Member Maleka.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know whether I'm audible.
Yes, you are, Member Maleka. You can continue.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I want to, can you allow me now to open the video? We don't have electricity, so there is a challenge of network. I want to check, Chairperson. Many offices of the SD, SASA and post offices were badly vandalized and looted during the unrest. How many of these offices that were vandalized and looted are operating, and how many are still not operating, if there are any? And my next question, Chairperson. The department, I don't know whether they did ask this one because I was having a challenge of a network. Why is that other question that I want to? Okay. The department reports on outstanding payment transaction from May, from 1 May 2020 until 30 April 2021, which is 581.818 transactions from applicants. Those applications were approved but not paid because they could not be traced, or they did not contact SASA to update their personal details. This includes a total of 571.724 grants, which remain uncollected from the South African Post Office as at 30 July 2021. What is the current status regarding the unclaimed SRD grants to date? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Maleka. We've got Member Dongeni next.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not quite sure whether I'm audible.
You are, Member Dongeni. You can continue.
Okay, thank you, Chair. During the visit to Parliament in KZN and Gauteng last year, the department made mention that it will make a formal request that the food that was recovered from the looters be provided to the department so that it can distribute it to those in need of department of Social Grant Shelter. Can the department update us about this, whether this request was accepted or not? The second question, during the Parliament Oversight visit during the week of 27 to 31st July 2021, the KZN Department of Social Development requests that it would require about 513.9 million so for social relief of distressed, and that's made a request for funding from Treasury. What is the progress regarding the request from Treasury? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. If there's no other member, I will just, I just have one question to the department, and that is on the unrest of the children. In Gauteng, 35 children were arrested. Ekurhuleni, 15, Joburg, 15, Sedibeng, 3, and Westrand, 2. All children were assisted and consequently placed with parents, although some in Joburg were diverted to life skills programs. 7 children were arrested in KZN. social services and were offered also to persons by the civil unrest, including the counseling services and support, assistance with birth certificates, social relief of distress, and arranged for a client to admit it at the hospital due to some mental disability. Now, my question on this is, the update on these children that were arrested and were placed back in the care of their parents, and also the issue of the children in Joburg that were diverted to life skills programs. Can we get an update on that one, and did it assist? The issue of the social relief of the stress was highlighted throughout, but my issue is on the issue that clients were admitted to hospital for mental disability or mental support. Does the department maybe have an update from the Department of Health on what happened to that patient, and also the assistance that were given to this people in distress regarding the birth certificates of the children? Thank you very much. Over to you, Mr. Linton.
Chair, thank you very much. And thank you to the honorable members for the questions. I'm going to ask Peter. I wonder if Isabella is here. I know she's supposed to be here. I would have hoped that she would be able to respond to the issue of children in particular. And I'm going to ask Peter to start and respond to the questions raised by yourself, Honorable Chair, including those by Honorable Ndongeni around the funding, the food that we had intended to give to those in distress that was confiscated, for lack of a better word, but also to respond to the issue of officers asked by Member Maleka. And then, of course, to also respond to, I'm not sure if I heard Member Lehili's message quite clearly. I would kindly request that it please be repeated if possible. But I will ask Peter first, and then I will ask Kumbula to respond on the issue of social workers in terms of numbers. And then I will ask Sasa to come in immediately after that, and I'll come in at the end. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, our acting DG, and thanks very much for the chairperson and members. And thanks very much for the questions, and I think they are valuable questions that we need to answer. Let me start with the ones, the simple one. The issue of food. We indeed requested SAPS to when they recover food in the homes of the people that have taken the food, we requested them to give us or to distribute this food to the needy families that we already know. In KZN, indeed, those foods, the department, the SAPS, and the Department of Social Development were working together. A list were provided, and they were able to be distributed. Some of the food were able to be distributed to the families that are in need and in different areas. But in Gauteng, no food we were told there were no food that were recovered. And we were also informed that that there's no food that can be distributed, meaning that although they accepted from SAPS, we didn't get any, we didn't receive any, and we were not part in terms of the distribution because they said there was nothing. Whereas in KZN, they were collaborated and they distributed. We gave them a list, we were part, and they each was distributed. On the issue of the, remember during the unrest, some of the issues that took place were that during the unrest, the impact of the unrest also affected young children that were part, Some of them, they were just caught in between. And some families were just implicated. So therefore, there were a lot of challenges that created or that exposed people to vulnerability. And those people that were exposed to vulnerability needed some sort of counseling. Some needed, I think the chairperson have highlighted some of the things that we've done. They wanted to be consoled. Some of them had psychological problems. Some of them, their best certificate were lost, and some of them needed SRD. So the psychosocial support that were services that were supported ranges between counseling, provision with any assessment that they need to be assessed so that they can be referred to services. And it also involves a broad range of counseling, not once, not twice. And I think the DG have raised that. What are the lessons that we've learned? One of the lessons that we've learned is that we needed to have enough support services that we need to give psychologically to our people. We needed to mobilize as many as people as we need so that they can receive the social services that we have. The last one is that I think this one, a chairperson, we will need to just get the report, because once the services are reintegrated into the mainstream of services that we are rendering, we will still need a special close-up report that indicated what have taken place. Indeed, in KwaZulu-Natal, there were 35 kids that were arrested, but what we received was that when the social worker intervened, they were assessed and they were placed with their parents, it was found that indeed they were not really part and parcel of the unrest as such. They were just caught in the crossfire as the things were happening. Member Lee, he asks a question on the amount of money that were set aside for home community-based care, centers for disabled persons, the home for children, and the funding as such. That information is available, but we will not be able to provide it at the, we will not be able to provide it now. That information we can get, and we'll be able to send. As to the number of offices that were damaged, we had that report, and I think we can be able to package it and send it to the chairperson on the number of offices that were destroyed. It's a massive number in KZN in different areas, both Vlamaco, Phoenix, and other places. So we I would propose at UDG that we can sum up that report and send it to the committee as soon as possible. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the Acting Director General.
Thanks, Peter. Did you respond to the fact that, well, maybe I can add a little bit just to assist. Just on the offices, I think Kwamashu and Bridgetown in the main was affected mostly, and of course in surrounding areas. But I think the important thing is to indicate that we have found alternative accommodation for some offices that were badly affected. And so there is alternative accommodation. I can confirm 100% that all the services that were rendered by those offices are still operational. It may not be directly out of that office. It may in some cases be through mobile services that we've provided, but I can confirm that in those areas where there was these aspects affected, we found alternative space in those areas to ensure that people are able to still receive the support that they require. Can I ask Kumbula to quickly respond on the number of social workers? I know that KZN was the highest in terms of the recruitment, but I know Gauteng also recruited some social workers. Kumbula, if you could please speak to that in the specific areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, let me just say that the employment or the recruitment of social workers or social work graduates was done in two phases. The first phase was a period between June, July, August, and September 2020. And we had actually received funding during this period to employ 1,809 social workers on a contract basis. This period was later extended, but during this period, we appointed 1,037 social work graduates. Now, so it was, in a sense, less than what was allocated or what we had intended, which is 1,809. And the reason for this is because Western Cape did not participate in the process, citing various reasons. Key among those were lack of accommodation, etc., and supervision. And so that reduced our numbers. Then this was extended. It was extended in November, December 2020 to March 31st, March 2021. So during this period, we recruited approximately 1,300 graduates. And thereafter, we then commenced with the second bid. And that bid was then, the bid was actually done in April 2021. And the idea was to appoint 2,000 social work graduates for a period of 10 months beginning June 2021. So unfortunately, we didn't get the allocation as was planned. We got the allocation very late in October, November. This notwithstanding, we managed to surpass the figure of 2,000. Eventually, we appointed 3,473 social workers all in all. Now, in terms of provinces, Eastern Cape appointed 490, and it was allocated 184. Free State, 170. Gauteng, 1,026, KwaZulu-Natal, 967, and then Limpopo, 479, Mpumalanga, 236, Northern Cape, 20, Northwest, 85. That makes the total of 3,473. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Kumbula. It's okay, I wanted you to really focus more on the KZN numbers and the Gauteng numbers. Because I know in KZN, in terms of the presentation we did yesterday at MinMac, there was a significant increase in numbers there. So thank you very much for that. Let me now ask Sasa to come in and respond to the questions raised, particularly around the asylum seekers and those who have not yet received their monies. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, DG, and thank you, honorable members. The asylum seekers, the total number, and these are current numbers, total number of unique applications. So once we had taken out the duplications, is 16,279. Of those, 11,413 have been approved. The others would have been disapproved for various reasons. The majority of the reasons for not approving the grant is that the asylum seekers or special permit holders applied with documents that were not valid. So the asylum seeker permit could have been valid before March of 2020, and then we would not have been able to accept it. If it was valid from March 2020, we would have accepted it because there were systematic extensions provided by the Minister of Home Affairs during the lockdown period. So the bulk of the applications that were declined were for documents that were not valid. All of the asylum seekers that have been approved were paid. They've been paid up to November. We're currently busy with the second tranche of payments for the asylum seekers and special permit holders, and that is from December to February. They do take slightly longer to pay than the other categories because we've got to go back to Home Affairs to verify the validity of the permits and of each month. And that is a manual process. It is not a system process like the other one. So it does take slightly longer for us to be able to pay those. Then on the outstanding payments, for the first iteration of the grant, which went up to April 2021, there are just over 328,000 clients who've not collected their grants yet. They could have more than one grant that they've not yet collected at the post office. And then for the second cycle, which started from August, there are 442,000 clients who've not yet collected their money at the post office. For these clients, we do send SMS notifications advising them that the money has not been collected, and if that they don't collect it, that there is a chance it could be forfeited to the state. We have not yet taken back any money. We are still trying to see how we can get, how we can contact these clients to make sure that they collect their money. But it must also be remembered by the honorable members that the only means of communication we have is through SMS, through the cell phone number that they provided when they applied. And the challenge comes in when you get multiple applicants who apply with a single cell phone, that we're not sure that the message always gets to the right person. And this has been one of the challenges we have experienced with this grant. Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, Didi.
Thanks, Diane. I just want to indicate two aspects, Chair. I just want to indicate two aspects. There was a question around the psychosocial support that is continuing. I think in most aspects, Chair, it's important to highlight that indeed some of the support will continue until the recipients, in this case, I would call them, are at a place where they are much more comfortable to continue with the affairs, as it were. And so the trauma of COVID-19 was a difficult aspect in itself. And the additional trauma of, in most cases, people who have lost jobs is in a way almost double trauma, you know, including the fact that they've lost family members, etc. Most of them have. And so we have to continue that psychosocial support. It's imperative that we do so that, you know, we were able to provide the adequate support to everybody who still requires the support. And then lastly, I think that there was a question around additional allocation, whether KZN had received it or not. I think we'll have to check, Chair, and come back on that. But what I do know is that because of the time that this has happened and because of the immediate need that surfaced, the budget process would not have allowed that they receive additional money at that time. And so that's why we as a department, as a national department, had to really come in and assist by engaging a number of stakeholders like the Solidarity Fund, for example, and a number of others who have also been very generous to contribute and assist. We ourselves also used additional funding from our coffers, particularly at SASSA, to ensure that we're able to roll out social relief of distress. So I just wanted to respond to that, those two questions in a much more succinct manner, Honorable Chairperson. I think then that we've covered all questions, and I want to thank you indeed and honorable members for the questions posed to ourselves. Thank you, ma'am.
Let me take the opportunity to thank Mr. Linton and his team, and also the members for the questions. I just want to know, members, is there any follow-up question? I see Member Latuli is struggling with her connection, and I've asked her to put a question in on the chat, but I don't know if she's back. I see member questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to understand Chairperson, with regard to the contract posts, I just want to understand, will those posts be extended? Those contracts, will they be extended? Because they were initiated in December. And it was due to end soon after that. So I would like to know about the extension of those contracts. And then also, what worked with that program and what did not work? What were the, in other words, again, what were the lessons learned when that program was rolled out? And then another question, Chairperson, with regard to the queues at SASSA points. It's a huge, huge issue, I think, in all provinces. What is SASSA doing with regards to those long queues and where people get turned away at the end of the day and are not attended to? Is there plans on the table? And can they just explain that to us, please? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christens. Member Lutuli, you're back. You can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Am I audible now?
Yes, my dear, I can hear you.
Thank you so much. And my apology. Hey, the network is killing me here in Dwede. No, I think I'm covered with other questions, like the one that Honorable Christine just asked now about the long queues. But also I wanted to ask the DSD. I hear in their presentation, they spoke of services that they were providing and they are still providing, especially on shelters. I feel that our DSD is not doing justice, especially on rural areas whereby we have no place of safety for whatever victims, whether GBV victims or any kinds of victims. So what are they doing, especially in Dwede, where there are no place of safety? And also I wanted to ask SASSA that there were cases and there are still cases whereby people get approved of the relief fund at the 350 rand. And when they get to the post office, they find out that their money has been withdrawn. Is there a system in place where it can be seen who withdrew the money and so on? Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Lutuli. And I will hand over to the department again.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Member Lutuli and Member Christians. On the social workers, I'll ask Kumbula to also come in, but I must indicate that one of the challenges that we had was the fact that we received the money very late. And we've had to therefore start, almost have a start-stop process, which is not conducive. But we now have the social workers and our intention is to carry them through for a longer period. But the critical aspect, and we've engaged with Treasury in this regard, so that we're able to keep them for a much longer period. You know, the critical aspect around this, Chairperson, is the budgetary aspect that is the budget, actually. You know, we don't have adequate budget coming in from the Treasury, and we've put bids in. We're in the process now of consolidating a much more detailed strategy around how we can employ social workers across the government space. And this is to respond to a cabinet decision that was taken around 2018 or so. So we have that strategy. We do think that some provinces have been able to absorb social workers on a more permanent basis, like the Free State, for example. I know that those who were absorbed on a short-term basis, they have found a way to ensure that they're able to continue them much longer, on a permanent basis rather. So that's the one aspect, is really the serious challenge around budget that we continue to face with the limited allocation that we get from the Treasury in this regard. It's a fight that we continue to have, but we are working on a strategy to try and address that. Kumbula, if you can respond just a little bit more on the social workers as well, in terms of lessons learned, et cetera, please. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Certainly, DG is correct. The idea is to keep the social workers. In terms of the current contract, the contract is coming to an end on the 31st of March. We are engaging with the National Treasury to look at possibilities of extension. The previous contract costed, the previous allocation was 220 million rands distributed across provinces. So, of course, it gives you a sense of the figures that we are talking about. And the constant refrain from National Treasury is that there is no budget and that you cannot roll over COE. But we are continuing to engage on this. And we intend to put a joint bid with the sector departments in order to find a lasting and permanent solution to the employment of social workers. So in the meantime, we have asked provinces to look at what is available in the kitty, and then where possible, employ or continue with the contracts of those social workers until such time that a permanent solution has been found. We will do the same at the level of the national office, and that process, as I've said, has already commenced. Of course, there are no guarantees, and they've never been guarantees, even before we struggled, because the COE has been reduced sizably, not just for this department, for this sector, but the entire government. So that's the reality that we are dealing with. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kumbula. Just on the question by Honorable Luthuli on the issue of shelters. So I want to indicate that you're quite correct, Honorable Luthuli, that we do have a challenge of shelters, particularly in rural areas. Now, we've identified hotspots, particularly for gender-based violence. And we were given a clear directive by the president that every district in the country has got to have at least a shelter. Now, in our assessment, there are 8 districts which currently don't have shelters. And we are working hard to ensure that we mobilize the necessary resources and support from the provincial departments to ensure that we're able to establish shelters in those areas. This is also in line with the Khuseleka centers. We only have, I think, 3, if I'm not mistaken, with 6 provinces that don't have at the moment. So we're working hard to try and ensure that that takes place. Actually, oh no, sorry. I think I was muted. I apologize. Maybe I can start again, Chair. I was responding to the issue on shelters.
We heard you, sir.
Okay. I just wanted to say that just yesterday we had a meeting with all MECs, and the meeting, one of the critical agenda items was this aspect of shelters, particularly for victims of gender-based violence, and in some cases even with children. So there is a commitment by MECs to ensure that in those areas and districts where there are no shelters, the provinces will work hard in ensuring that we have shelters established in those very specific areas. And then we have been tasked to establish a task team with provincial departments, the team who works on infrastructure programs, and the team who works, or the line function or team or the program, as we call it, to establish a committee that will be able to provide guidance and feedback and progress with regards to the establishment of shelters. You know, just to indicate that we found that the establishment of shelters is not so much of a difficult challenge, because we work hand in hand with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Where the challenge comes, Chair, is the sustainability of the shelters. So it is an aspect that we are addressing. As I indicated, it's now sitting at the highest level with MECs to try and find resolve as a way forward on this matter. Lastly, Chair, I will ask Sasa just to respond quickly on the issue of queues. If you could come through quickly, Sasa.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. I must indicate that the issue of queues is one of the things that continues to keep us awake. The challenge that we've had, particularly in the past 3 months, has been as a result of the fact that our system was challenged by a lack of updates that had not been done for quite a while from the CETA side, because CETA is the institution that provides us support with regards to SOCPEN. All the updates have now been done, and we believe that the impact on clients will be less than what it has been for the past few months, which has created huge frustration, particularly for clients, but also for staff in instances where clients come through and they cannot be able to support them. We as a collective are also looking at a number of strategies, but also systems for us to make sure that we improve the issue of queues in our environments. The one issue is for us to look at a overall customer strategy so that we can look at what are the different tools that we can put in place to be able to provide support. And one of them is for us to make sure that we have a clear queue management so that when customers come to our space, we can make sure that they are supported quickly and efficiently. We also are engaging with labor, whereby we can ensure that we have customer care people that can come in the offices early in the morning so that customers can be processed, whereby, because in some instances, you find that customers have got wrong documents, but they don't know that they do, and they end up having to come back to our offices a number of times. The other key area we're looking at is to make sure that our customer engagement, which is more us getting back to communities to engage customers in their own community so that we can make sure that they don't come through to us, but we can engage them from where they are. We've had a number of challenges with many of the service points being closed, because in terms of the model that we use is we've got much fewer offices than the service points that we actually use, particularly in areas like Western Cape, where we had 100 service points, but these were closed as a result of COVID because either they were not OHS compliant or the city may have taken a view that they want to use those offices for COVID. We are at a space where we're re-looking at going back to those service centers that we've used before so that we can ensure that we continue to provide effective support closer to communities so that they don't have to travel far when they need support. DG, thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. Honorable Chairperson, let me once again thank the members for the questions the inputs as well that has been provided. We appreciate the opportunity. That brings us to the end, Honorable Chairperson, of our presentation and responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Linden. Members, is there still any follow-ups, or can we excuse the department? Member Latuli said an old hand. Okay, I think that's an old hand from Member Latuli. Let me then take the opportunity to thank the department, the DG, and the minister in absentia, but we understand that she's preoccupied. Thank you very much for this briefing and for the honest reports. At this point in time, we will then excuse the department so that the committee can continue with the other work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, members, thank you very much. Marcel, you can flag the minutes that we need to discuss. Just guide me. Is it only one set of minutes and then another presentation?
Chairperson, it's two sets of minutes. Tabile will be sharing the document. I'm working from my phone. My laptop has kicked me out. So Tabile will take us through the minutes by means of sharing, Chair. I think the first minute is the minute of 7 December 2021. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Marcel. Thank you, Tabile. So it is the minutes of the 7th of December. And the agenda points was the consideration and adoption of the committee first term 2022 program, consideration and the adoption of committee minutes. Members, I think we did receive this before the meeting. So I will first ask if there is any corrections that members wants to bring into the minutes. But Tabile, you can move. Members, if you don't have any corrections, that is the minutes of the 7th of December, I will then ask if there is a mover for the adoption of the minutes and also for a second. Thank you. Member Dongeni, thank you. Thank you, Member Dongeni. Is there a second? Is there a second for the adoption of the minutes?
Christian, second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Christians. Tabile, you can flag the other minutes. Members, this minutes is the 8th of March, and the agenda was a briefing by the South African Social Security Agency on the annual report 2020-21, and also the briefing by the National Development Agency on the annual report 2021. We only had one apology of Member Lahi that was sick. I also believe that we received the sets of minutes before this meeting, and I would ask if there's any member who wants to make a correction in this minutes. If there is no correction, if there's no corrections, members, I will put the minutes before you for a mover for the adoption of the minutes as well as the seconder. Is there a mover?
Chairperson Malika, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Member Malika. Is there a seconder?
I second, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member Baga. Is there any other issue, Marcel or Tabile? Tabile or Marcel, are we finished?
Chair, that's it for in terms of household issues, Chair.
Thank you very much, Marcel. Members, let me take the opportunity to thank you once again for your availability and for your participation in this meeting. Enjoy your evening. This meeting is adjourned, members.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night, Chair.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tabile.
Bye.